Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
My guest today on the For Love and Money podcast is a professional keynote speaker, author, and expert on resilience. She regularly features in the media on this topic. Heidi Denning believes that education changes lives. Combining the insights she has learned from surviving a paralyzing illness, a gunpoint kidnapping, a life-threatening tsunami, and petrol bombs with her impressive business and health education background, Heidi has a unique ability to elevate the professional resilience of leaders and their teams. This enables them to make better decisions, be more innovative, have more energy, optimism, and empathy, and successfully deal with change, stress, and uncertainty. Heidi has dedicated her career to inspiring thousands of people globally with practical strategies that improve resilience, self-leadership, and well-being. And this ranges from small children on remote Pacific islands to professional teams across 19 different industries. In this episode, Heidi shares her story that brought her to becoming one of Australia's foremost experts on resilience. She generously shares some strategies for cultivating resilience and explains why it is so important. Now, you might be wondering, why is this relevant to a podcast that explores the intersection of love and money or purpose and profit? Well, leaders of this movement for purpose-led business will face many bumps on their path to purpose. There will be and is resistance to the change that becoming truly purpose-driven demands of businesses and leaders. Cultivating resilience in yourself is vital if you are going to go the distance. Now, clearly it's also vital for teams, but today's episode is for you. This is about cultivating resilience for yourself, and it is important. I hope you get value from my interview with Heidi. She is amazing and has so much wisdom to impart on this subject of resilience. Here it is. Heidi, welcome to the For Love and Money podcast.
Hello, Carolyn. Lovely to be here.
I'm going to kick off with the question I ask all my guests, and I can't wait to hear your answer on this. What is your view? Is there a role for love in business?
Absolutely. And I think I'm in a pretty lucky position where I get to see love in business all the time. I'm often booked by people who just love people and care for people and are very mindful that we are going through some really hard times, and often that's why I'm brought in. So when I have briefing calls to speak to them about what's going on within their organizations, what is really clear to me immediately is how much they love people and how their willingness to be curious about the people within their association, their teams, their organizations, how they're paying enough attention, you know, not just of what the people around them can produce for, you know, the team or the organization, but looking at their whole selves. And it's just this beautiful thing to see leaders be so worried about the people that they're leading, and knowing that because there is so much going on in the world and for people, there's so much change going on within our professional worlds, let alone, you know, the whole world, that people are really struggling. And it takes really brave, courageous leaders to put people first, I think, when they have to report to boards or to the leaders above them on KPIs and all these performance indicators. And what they're doing, though, instead, because of their love of the people within their business, they are looking for the signs. They're looking to see when people aren't really performing as well, or they're a little bit wobbly. And that's why I get the opportunity to come in and support them and hopefully give them the strategies and tools and techniques and models, just little bit to help them, you know, deal with this crazy world we do live in. So yes, there's definitely a role for love in business. And there are, despite what we have to read and see day in, day out, which feels quite depressing, there are a lot of people in our world who really care a lot. And, you know, when you get to like I do, you know, meet them, speak to them, watch them. It brings back your faith in humankind for sure.
That's really uplifting, actually. And I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but it makes complete sense that, you know, if people are bringing you in to speak about resilience, it's not just a tick box. It comes from a place of care, and care is just another expression of love. I know a lot of people aren't comfortable with this word love being used in business, and yet, you know, you've got to really care deeply about people to be prepared to invest in that sort of thing. So that's fascinating. Heidi, can you share your journey? I've seen you speak, and I know you've got some incredible stories that you've shared. Can you share some of that journey to where you are now? You've become this expert on resilience and a keynote speaker on it. So, you know, what's the background to it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel like I've always been a speaker in some form. I mean, I really say I've been an educator in some form. To me, education changes lives. Education's in my DNA. I, you know, when we get to educate and transform a life, that is one of the most fulfilling things you could ever do. And that's what I've really dedicated my career to, starting as a secondary school teacher. I've taught in the best and the worst schools and universities in early childhood and primary, Sydney, Vanuatu and London. And I say that most of my teaching was with teenage girls in high school. When you can engage 30 hormonal cocktail teenage girls for an hour without them, you know, causing a lot of trauma for yourself and everyone around them.
That and speaks then, volumes, right?
It does. And then right for the next hour, you've got to do the same. And then the next hour, you've got to do the same. I just think there's no audience you can put in front of me that is any worse than those 30 you know, cocktail teenage girls. That was certainly the start of my speaking and how to engage a room, I suppose, came from that. But I had an education not-for-profit 13 years, so I did a lot of speaking in more of a fundraising. You know, we were trying to get resources and people's time and help and skills, so I would speak to groups around that. And then, unfortunately, I survived a violent crime where I was leading a team in the Pacific, and we got caught up in some local cultural conflict that had nothing to do with us. And I mean, a long story short, we were attacked in the middle of the night while we were sleeping, and petrol bombs were thrown at our bedrooms, our bungalows, with the intention to actually burn us alive. Wow. So it was a horrific night. There was 25 in my team that I was leading, and, you know, we were on a remote corner of a Pacific island. You know, there was no 000 to call. Our vehicles had been petrol bombed. There was no escape. And there was a group of people really trying to cause a lot of harm throughout the night, let alone, you know, after the petrol bombs had been
That would have been terrifying.
It was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. I'll backtrack a little bit. So I speak about the fact, though, that we all have petrol bomb moments in our lives. You know, that was my actual petrol bomb moment, and it caused me to suffer from PTSD for about 18 months. And in a big way, I mean, I still have signs and symptoms of that pop up every now and then, despite all the work I've done. Crippling insomnia, I had top-to-toe injuries, so a lot of physical pain that I'm still struggling with. But the emotional scars of something so traumatic where you've been targeted has taken a lot of time and a lot of work to work through. But what I speak about is the fact that we all have our petrol bomb moments, you know, whether that is divorce, grief, you know, loss, mergers and acquisitions, you know, that redundancies, change of leadership. I mean, nothing should be compared to others. I mean, you know, we look at the trauma that's going on in the world, and there's major petrol bomb moments going on for a lot of people right now, actual ones, but worse. But we all have our petrol bomb moments. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that we all go through really hard things, and somehow, some way, we've got to recover. You know, we've got to make that choice to put in the little steps, little micro steps to keep going, so we can move forward and we can continue to give to our world in the way that we were put here for. So, I mean, that's what I, you know, yeah. So I, that terrible incident occurred. I struggled for quite a while.
How did you escape in the first instance?
Well, I woke to the scent of smoke. And so I woke to a room filled with smoke. And as I looked out my window, all I could see was flames. So, you know, I ran out of my room and started bashing on all the, you know, I was a volunteer group. We were doing work there on all their doors to, you know, get up, get out. We've got to run. And there was just fire everywhere. And these great big, it was really interesting because it was great, you know, obviously thatched huts as well, which is not conducive to safety, obviously, with fire, and these great big balls of fire, which were shooting out of the roofs. So we were, you know, running, but having to dodge these balls of fire that were just kind of projectiles coming from the fire. I mean, I don't know if there's probably a name for them, but yeah, we escaped. We ran down to a little area, and then we kind of went up to this hill on the side of a mountain, and just spent the entire night huddled together watching, you know, where we'd been burn. But we were attacked a couple of times during the night, and until the police came. And, you know, we waited really to dawn. Yeah, it was dawn. And then I was in contact with the Australian Embassy throughout the night. They sent in two small planes to evacuate us the next day. But, you know, there was a lot of betrayal, and that was a part, you know, it's interesting, Carolyn, you know, people, the problem with mental ill health and trauma and, you know, all these ill health things that aren't shown on the outside. Like, so yeah, I had a broken bone in my foot, so I was on crutches for a while, and everyone would feel fine to ask me about how the healing of my foot was going. But my foot was nothing compared to what was going on inside my head and inside my heart, because it both were broken. I mean, I was broken from what happened. That foundation meant everything to me. My husband and I had never been able to have children. And, you know, as a woman, you're asked every single day of your life, oh, do you have kids? And which it can be hard when you've gone through a lot of struggle to have children and not been able to. But I found a way, because I could always say, oh no, but I've got 220 children in Vanuatu that I look after. And I really framed it, that it was really how I framed it. And I really felt that way, that the reason why we weren't able to have children was because I had another role in life, and that was to give children better life opportunities by improving their literacy. And we did teenage empowerment programs for teenage girls. And I really felt that. So when this happened, to feel, you know, for lots of reasons, we weren't able to go back because of that particular night, and then found there was a lot of betrayal. You know, the police had actually incited these men to do what they did. The deputy at the school that we had been supporting for all these years had known that it was going to happen and chose not to tell us.
My God, that's so much to deal with.
Yeah. Even the Australian Embassy, I mean, as much as they were amazing during that night and the next day, when I asked, you know, I said, how will you support us to be able to get justice? Because, you know, justice is a really interesting thing that you don't realise how important it is until you're at the end of a crime like that. And they pretty much said, look, I'm sorry, but we can't support you because we're not prepared to disrupt our relationship with the local government and on where we were. Wow. So, you know, that was pretty disheartening that we couldn't get justice, and we never did. They were never brought to trial, but never put forward. And I think we're in a remote area. I think even the community, I felt betrayed by that we'd been supported, because it's pretty obvious when there's, you know, 10 people missing who are bringing petrol bombs to throw at you and then they turn up a bit later, you know who those people are. But I suppose that, you know, that's, they're probably the bullies, you know, they're ones with too much power. They may be violent in other ways, so no one's going to be able to speak up and put them forward. But yeah, so there was a lot, there was a lot of betrayal, and that hurt a lot. It hurt a lot, and it really didn't help me be able to recover as quickly as I should have from it.
And so how did you recover? Like, how did the process unfold? Did you intentionally do things?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I did seek help, professional help. I knew I needed it. And it took me three or four people till I found the right person. I think it's really important to always say that, because I remember one GP I was seeing, because I had moved into a new area. I didn't have someone who knew me. And I remember this particular GP saying to me, "Oh, don't you think you could just put this down for like one of those bad things that happen in life and just kind of move on?"
I'm like, whoa.
Thank you for your compassion.
Lack of empathy. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see how you go if you've ever had petrol bombs thrown at you, just to kind of put it behind you really quick. But so, I mean, I always want to say it out loud, because it's very, I know I wanted to give up after that, of professionals aren't going to be able to help me. But I, as I kept unraveling, I knew that I needed more help. So I finally found somebody who was really remarkable in helping me heal. And I also had a beautiful close-knit group of people around me, my husband and sister, some really gorgeous friends who little by little they helped. And I think, you know, that connection piece of I was really, you know, to be connected. And I think when we are going through hard things, we don't need a lot of people. We just need some really good people, a few really good people, professionals, and those who we connect with. And I think that's one of the greatest lessons that I've been able to learn from that. And I think for all of us, you know, I always say we need to do the work in our good times, because we never know when those petrol bomb moments are going to happen. And that goes to keeping our connections healthy. It can be really easy to lose track of people and to get so bogged down with our long to-do lists and full inboxes that we don't prioritize the time to the good people in our lives. But we need to, for them and for us, because when things happen, which we can't even predict, we need to have those healthy connections to help us through. And also that we need to make sure that we keep up with our good habits, because you need to have those good habits happening, you know, self-care and the connection habits and things that we do that we know are going to help us when times are tough. Because if you haven't got them in place and you have one of those petrol bomb moments happen, you're not set up to help yourself. And of course, we have to help ourselves as well as getting professionals to help us. So those habits and the rituals that we know work for us, we have to be doing during our good times. We have to be. Otherwise, it's too hard to do when we are at rock bottom.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But the reality, I'm sure, for most people is you don't even think about it. You know, your life is just too fast, too many things to do, and then when something happens, it completely hits you for six.
Sure does.
I want to, Heidi, frame this conversation a bit, because you and I have been talking and we've been catching up, and we caught up after the recent referendum on The Voice. And, you know, I think we've both been quite active in campaigning for the yes vote.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you, like me, kind of knew the result that was coming, as much as we tried to maintain optimism. I certainly didn't realize that the level of the result that came, and we got together and we were both devastated. Just thinking about what it meant for our First Nations people, and how such a small, modest ask could have the door slammed
Yeah.
You know, and what that meant for them and what it meant for us as Australians as well. And we had a long talk about it, and I remember the conversation being around how do we come back from this? I mean First Nations people, how do they deal with this?
Yeah.
And you and I both know how we feel as supporters, and we can't even imagine how they must feel.
Not at all.
So for people generally, you know, First Nations people, supporters of First Nations people, people who generally just, you know, care enough to want to show up beyond business as usual and do more to create, you know, a better society. There's this, you know, the voice is one thing, that just everything, you mentioned it earlier in this interview, there's so much going on, right, in the world, and it feels like we are so small and insignificant and nothing we can do matters. And I get that feeling from people. I've had several conversations with people, and I felt heavy. I've been feeling heavy, heavy, heavy.
Yeah.
How do we, you know, pick ourselves up? How do we get that energy back that we need in order to move forward? Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you're feeling and just how you think maybe we take some next steps?
Yeah, look, I think, we have, and like you have, and so many others, the conversations for those who are in disbelief, I suppose, not just with the result, but the kind of extent of the result. And, you know, that also has come after a whole lot of terrible racism and horrible things online that people have had, we've had to read. And I know for myself, I've always had a personal kind of goal never to go into any comments on social media to because people are terrible. The comments are terrible, and they can really help you lose your faith in humanity when you see the terrible comments that people just write online. But for the voice referendum, I really wanted to make sure I understood both sides so I could speak fairly around and understand what perhaps the no voters were going through and in their thoughts. I mean, but I can't tell you just the trauma I felt from the comments, and I can't even begin to imagine what our First Nations people were experiencing, having to see the comments, have them at them. I know that they're equivalent to the Beyond Blue is 13 Yarn, I think it is called, and it was up 117% of calls for First Nations people just regarding the racism and bullying that they were experiencing in the lead up, which is just horrific. And I think we can all expect that we're going to feel heavy and sad. We're going to feel disillusioned. We're going to feel disempowered. These first couple of weeks, I felt very disempowered. And I'm sure, I think many of us have, no matter what we did, there's still this result. How is that possible? How is it possible? And that feeling of not having any kind of empowerment to make change is really hard. So I think the first step is to acknowledge that those feelings that we've got right now are real and they're valid. They're really valid, and it's okay. And it's okay. So that's the first thing. I really believe that many people have got a vicarious trauma right now, especially those that have a lot of empathy. You know, we reading comments online, watching the images of what's going on in the Middle East. I mean, the vicarious trauma that we are having in our bodies from having to witness what other people are dealing with, it's impacting everybody on some kind of level. And, you know, when I'm doing the work I'm doing and having the conversations that I'm having, people are really struggling, really struggling because not only are there's a huge amount of workload and people are already feeling like there's a lot to do and not enough time, they're already exhausted, but this kind of trauma from everything going on in the world has another level to it with, you know, natural disasters. It's a lot to take on. So we have an obligation to ourselves to do what's right for us, to make sure that we're okay. And we've got to start with us. And I think for all the people who were campaigning and really wanting that yes vote to get across the line, right now, before we can give our best to the world again and give our best to the next steps for that, we have to take care of ourselves, and we've got to start with us. And, you know, again, that connection piece, connecting with like-minded people is really important right now. I know Carol and I had told you the story that after the referendum, I was actually away with girlfriends I'd known for 40 years. And in the lead up to it, I was really worried that perhaps one of them I would have to deal with because I thought they may not be a yes voter. And some of the things that were being said that weekend, I found myself in my bedroom just sobbing from hearing it. And I don't think we know the depths of our pain and hurt from it all. And those moments happen. And although I've always wanted, I believe we should all have a very diverse group of people around us, because otherwise, you know, the algorithms on social media will only allow us to see people who believe in the same values as us, which is, it's kind of great, but then we get a real shock, right? When, yeah. You know, the whole Donald Trump thing was one of those moments. I was like, how could all these people? I've not seen one thing that one person would vote for him.
Yeah.
So real shock. So yeah. The algorithms will always point you towards people who have the same values and morals as you, which is great. You get to live in your bubble of likeness. So it's important that you find other people that have different views, have these diverse conversations, be curious about why people believe different things to what you believe. But right now, I don't think we should be doing that, because I don't think we should have anyone saying, oh, I told you so. Yeah, look, you know, that was all right. We need to stick with people right now who feel how we feel, because we're all struggling so much. So that connection piece to me is absolutely number one. The second thing I believe we all need to start to do, we've had that there was that beautiful week of silence. And I think, you know, there needs to probably be a little bit more of not going really hard on the big things, but the tiny little micro wins, I think we've got to start to think about it on a daily basis. Now, on a personal level, I think we should all be just, you know, what's one thing that's gone well for us today? Because when we see so much of the news that is really traumatic, what's the one good thing that's happened to us? Because when we can get into the habit, and this is something that psychologists I was seeing after the petrol bombs taught me, that when we can scan our day, even on diabolical days, and extract one thing that's gone well, it really can change the perspective we've got on life. And for me at the time, it helped me to go to bed with a sense of optimism rather than being completely paralyzed with fear from, you know, is someone going to petrol bomb me again? And, you know, this, it was a practice that I've put in place, and I've taught it to, I don't know, tens of thousands probably of people, professionals around the globe. And it is the one thing that people always come back to me about how that has made such a difference. So if everyone who's listening can try to get into the habit of extracting that one micro win they've had in a day. And I've set up different WhatsApp groups to do this, like just with friends or with teams, that on a daily basis, we just share that one micro win, because we get that lovely dose of dopamine when we do it ourselves and when we read other people's. And I always say, you know, no one's to comment. We don't need another to-do thing in our day. You just give it a little love heart reaction, but it really gets you in the habit. And that's, again, it's those habits of it, finding the one thing that's gone well. And I think one thing we can now take from the voice is the two things that I keep coming back to. Firstly, over 5 million people voted yes. Mm. Now that's more than any political party got in our last election. So there's a win, right?
Yep.
Let's do something with that. Another thing is, I think it was 80,000 people signed up to be volunteers somehow, some way in the lead up to the referendum.
Incredible.
Correct. There's not been anything, no campaign in the history of Australia that has had that many people sign up for the one belief. Let's somehow...
And that's activism, isn't it? It's correct. Like, you know, activism in action. We are going to take action.
Correct. And once we've all recentered and regrouped and been able to get our sparkle back on, and that may be, it might take 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, depending on who we are and what else we've got going on in our lives. So no one's to compare. Let's remember that and re-engage in that. And just start to do the little things. I remember that weekend when I was feeling so disempowered, you know what, and it's such a stupid, smidgy little thing, but I went on to Spotify and I just, all weekend I played Indigenous artists because I just thought they're getting 0.001 cent of a cent probably each time I play their song. But that's all I can do right now. And I just want to do something because that feeling
that's that's a lovely action to take.
I don't know, like it doesn't make any difference, but it's that feeling of this is the one thing I can do right now.
Yeah.
The only thing I know I can do right now. And I think if we can find that one thing, it can help us feel a little bit better that we've got a tiny bit of control in our lives when it has felt like the control's gone.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025.
Do you know what I really love about the micro moments, the micro wins, is it forces you to reflect.
Yeah.
And I think reflection is one of the most powerful things we have in our armory that you know, most of us don't have time to do it. But even if you can take 5 minutes a day, you know, at the end of the day or in the morning to just reflect and scan the past 24 hours, for that micro win, and you'll probably find more than one, right?
You do, and then you've got to choose. Oh, which has been my best micro win? But it's a great place to be in if you've got to choose, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, look, I say, you know, you have a little, if you can do it in lots of ways. I said the WhatsApp group. You can put it in a little, you can buy a beautiful little notebook that you write it in every day. You might just share it with a colleague before you leave the office. Or you might, I go home some days and I say to my fur babies, Daisy, Dimples, Lady Beetle, guess what mummy has achieved today? So like you can do it in lots of different ways. I was presenting to an early learning centres in the last couple of weeks. And one of the centre directors, she messaged me, and what she's done with the micro win moments is she's put a great big notice board in their staff room, and the staff members, before they go home with a little post-it note, have to put one of their micro wins on the day on the
oh, that's wonderful.
Board.
Love that.
Yeah. And I mean, what a beautiful thing. And so not only are they doing that, but they're seeing everybody else's win. Mm. And that is, it's just that collective dopamine that goes off in your body that can really change you from feeling quite low into feeling like there's some optimism in our world.
Yeah. And the fact that you're looking for the micro wins.
Yeah.
Is, you know, you start to realize how sometimes, well, it is the small things that we have the most to be grateful for.
Sure do. Yeah.
We've talked about the voice referendum, and, you know, this episode, obviously it was sparked by our conversation after that. And I want it to be wider because it's important. I just feel at this time of year as well, we're in November, towards the end of the year, and I'm feeling tired. You know, things that are happening, they do affect you, you know, as much as you try not to. And I really like that you said take that time to retreat and look after yourself. But before we go to the sort of general part, First Nations people, surely they must be the most resilient people on this planet. You know, if we think about what their ancestors have had to go through, and you know, how inhumane and deeply unfair the things that they've had to counter and deal with. And I was speaking to another friend after the referendum, and you know, we were talking about it, and she turned to me, and her father is Indigenous, but I think she's adopted. But she said, do you know, First Nations people have had to deal with far worse than this.
Yeah.
And it feels like this is awful.
It is awful.
And it is. It yeah. is.
Yeah.
But you're that right. is the truth. That is the, truth, the truth, right?
Yeah.
And I can't help but wonder how much we could learn from them, because despite all of these things that have happened to them, not only do they keep showing up, but their leaders have been showing up with open hearts so far, right?
Yes.
I just wonder, you know, do you have thoughts on this, on what we can learn?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I obviously do a lot of work around that topic of resilience that we're talking about today. It can be a word that's been overused, especially over the last few years. It was overused during the COVID years, without a doubt. But I say, you know, it's misused. People always talk about, you're only resilient if you can bounce back. And that's been the kind of expression that's been used. And it's not my belief that that's what resilience is about. Resilience is about bouncing forward. It's about extracting the insights from the challenges that we've gone through. It's about using those insights to the new challenges that we don't even know are in front of us yet, so we can continue to move forward. And I think that's exactly what our First Nations people have continued to do, despite the gazillion challenges they've had over the 65,000 years. And first, of course, that is just about survival in, you know, in the world that 65,000 years ago was, through to these last, you know, couple of hundred years where the challenges have been of a different scale. And when you think about the challenges that they've gone through to continue to survive, it's because they have extracted learnings from each one, and they've continued to show up and apply what they've learned from their past so they can continue to move forward. And I think the deep wisdom that they have, that we are so lucky to learn from. I mean, how they've cared for this country of ours that we get to work, live and play and, you know, enjoy. I just the wisdom that they have from 65,000 years of being here. Yeah, I mean, if that's not resilient, what is? Like, there's no one more resilient than our First Nations people. No one. They just keep showing up and keep putting one little step in front of the other in whatever the way they can. And, you know, I can't wait to see what happens next. Despite, I feel sick in my tummy that there's got to be some kind of plan B with what we wanted. But I know they said we don't have a plan B. I know that's what they said on the election night. But we know there's something bubbling away, and that's resilience for you. We're just going to shut down now, giving up. They would never do that. We will never do that. We'll be galvanized by this in some way. And we have a moral obligation to everyone that's come before us, to all the First Nations people who've come before them, the people who are striving for this change today. We all have a moral obligation for those who've come before us to continue to fight for what's fair and just and what should be, without a doubt.
Absolutely. And that idea of the moral obligation, I know we were speaking earlier about this, is, you know, the fact that each of us is here today is, the odds are so against it happening. If you think way back, generations and generations, and how, you know, you go way back and it's only the toughest that survived, and yet we are here today in this society, and it's a miracle that we are, and it's testament to our ancestors and what they did, some good, some bad. But the fact that we are here today and we have an opportunity to leave a positive imprint, and as you say, a moral obligation to do so, I think is such a powerful sentiment to take. And the other one is with our First Nations people, with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, they no longer have to walk alone or alone with a smattering of people. Five million people,
yes,
you know, have a much deeper awareness and emotional investment and belief and desire to walk together with them.
Yeah.
And I think that that is a momentum that, you know, we really need to cultivate, because we can see a better future. We can see a better future for everybody, you know, if we can support each other. And you know, that is such an incredible opportunity.
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is.
So can you share with us, I love what you've shared so far on resilience. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners to help them as we move, you know, from the end of a bruising 2023 for many to 2024, which I don't think we can pretend is going to be roses and light.
No.
But, you know, what is a pathway to help people approach a new year in a way that gives them sort of, you know, positive, resilient mindset to set them up to, you know, achieve what they want to achieve, but do it sustainably?
Yes, and you're right. People are exhausted, they're overwhelmed, they're feeling uncertain, disillusioned, disempowered. And yeah, we're not coming into paradise coming up there. We already know of a few things, you know, another interest rate rise. Oh, you know, there's a lot of financial distress. We don't need to say it all out loud. Everyone knows it. So what can we do for ourselves? How can we give the world the best of us, not what is left of us? And I think that is the a really important question for all of us to ask ourselves. What is it that when I am feeling mentally wobbly can get me back to being mentally healthy so I can turn up to be a better leader, a better colleague, a better mentor, a better daughter, mother, cousin, friend, human? What can help me to be a better human when I am feeling mentally wobbly? So to me, the first two things that I've spoken about is the connection piece, to make sure you're surrounded by a few good people. Doesn't have to be a lot. The second one is to get into that habit of extracting the one micro win every day from your life. Find a way to do that, whether it's by yourself, whether it's a shared thing with others, whether it's to your fur babies, like I have to do sometimes. But the third thing is, you know, everybody has their own three things. I always say that everyone's got three things that they know for them works really well. And we've all got three different things. So what works for me is going to be different to you, Carolyn, and it's going to be different for somebody else. So for example, my three top things I know I must do when I feel myself starting to unravel a little. Firstly, I need to have a giggle with my girlfriends, without a doubt. And you know, there's a connection piece in that, but it's like, I have to giggle with my girlfriends, and that can put my sparkle back on immediately. I need to get myself into nature in some way. And that could just be going out in my lunchtime, sitting in the grass, taking my shoes off, feeling the sun on my back, or it could be, you know, having the walk or watching the ocean, whatever. But nature, we know, has such a healing power, and we've learned this. This is a wisdom from our First Nations people, the importance of nature. But we know, I mean, psychology researchers have found that it does, you know, improve our creativity, decision making, problem solving. We know the healing power of nature. So for me, that works nearly instantly. And can I just say with this that I'm talking about us feeling mentally wobbly, not after petrol bomb moments when we need more help. So there's a distinct difference. I'm not saying, you know, just going sitting on the grass is going to help after you've gone through one of your petrol bomb
moments. Of course, yeah.
So we do need to put professional help in the mix there. But the third bit is, for me personally, I like to, you know, move my body. Now that could be you know, The Killers, Mr. Brightside, I put on, and that just kind of makes me want to feel like I'm still 20 and dancing on tables in nightclubs and things like that. But I tell you what, it just makes me feel fantastic. And even just before I go on stage, even when I'm feeling the butterflies, I will hum that song in my head and just, you know, move a little bit. And all of a sudden I feel much better. And, you know, I like to exercise, so that is helpful. But, you know, for others, you know, it might be dancing, it might be moving, it might be taking the dog for a walk, whatever it is. But find those three things for you that makes you be able to intervene on yourself when you know you're starting to feel that little mentally wobbly moment coming on, because you've got to, you know, stick it on the fridge. And I can even give you a template that I share to organizations for everybody to do for themselves. Use it as a screensaver, put it on the fridge, whatever way, but know what works for you, and intervene on yourself when you need to. Put them in place, because, you know, I say, if it's going to be, it's up to me. No one else can do this for me. I can't outsource it to ChatGPT. I can't tick a box on Airtasker for these things to happen. I've got to be the one to do it.
That's brilliant. I love that. And you've got me thinking about my three things as well. I love the move my body, and it reminds me of a story you told me when you did that big keynote to what was it, $1 million table, and you said yes. you were practicing in the wings before, and a certain person
yes.
Do you want to share that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was in Nashville speaking to 6,000 of the world's leading finance and insurance professionals. It was, you know, the biggest audience I've ever had. It was really nerve-wracking, but really I didn't feel like the audience number would worry me, because I thought they would just lift me up and I would be feeling energized from them. But what really worried me was when I found out on the program that Dylan Allcott was speaking before me, who I have been, like, I have fangirled him for years because I'm a tennis tragic, and, you know, he's been like so incredible, won gold medals in tennis and in basketball, Australian of the year. He's amazing. So funny, and he's like, oh gosh, how can I be speaking after him? This is going to be diabolically bad and it's not fair. And anyway, I got to meet him, and he's just like you think he is. He's just a fabulous human. And we were both out the back in the green room before we were going on, and he was wheeling up and down, like getting in the zone, practicing, and I'm walking up and down, just doing my, you know, trying to remember and just trying to get relaxing myself. Anyway, I can't hear because it's so noisy at the back. And he's wheeled up to me and he's like, Heidi, you know, you look like a crazy lady. And anyway, because I, you know, I was speaking because I don't know if I've ever told you this, Carolyn, but I was a Spanish gypsy in my past life. I know that. And
I love it.
So I speak a lot with my hands, and it, like, my whole body speaks when I'm speaking, really. And he's just seeing me looking like a crazy lady out the back. And anyway, we had a good giggle, and that was very helpful because we laughed out loud. And that's something that can really help with nerves straight away, just to have a good belly laugh, which he certainly helped me have.
Oh, I love that. I love that story. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
As we start to wrap this up, I read a blog from Seth Godin this morning, very short one. I'm going to read it out because I think it's kind of relevant. Two ways to defend the status quo. Number one, deny the problem, minimize it, make up data, distract from the conversation, make people feel like hypocrites, and emphasize the convenient and persistent elements of what is in place. Two, acknowledge the problem, but point out that it's now far too late to do anything about it. Neither is true, helpful, or generous. Both happen all the time. Call it out when you see it. So the reason I raise this is because this is the BAU modus operandi. This is the business as usual, the society as usual. Let's not change anything. Let's keep things exactly as they are. And those are two ways that many people do that. And my network, listeners of this podcast, you know, are people who do want to challenge and change the status quo. And they do see a better way forward and a better future. And they want to be part of contributing to that. And I think it is so important. It's vital. It is non-negotiable to look after yourself. If you are on this journey, it's a long journey. It's the long game.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to, you can't just go full bore 100% all the time and not burn out. So resilience is something that you do really need to cultivate. I know it for myself. And self-care is something you need to cultivate, and, you know, all of the things you've talked about. But that's why I think, you know, it was so important, and I really wanted to have this conversation, particularly now, and at this time of year, and in light of so many different things that are happening. So thank you so much, Heidi, for coming and sharing your wisdom on this podcast. And I'd like to invite you to share any closing remarks and to close out this interview.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. It's been an honor to be on the podcast and share what we've been talking about with your listeners, because I think it's in the sharing of stories and the sharing of what we're going through right now is it makes it okay. It takes away that stigma that we have to, you know, be these stoic, right, no, I'm just going to move on and I'm all right and I'm okay, and we're not okay. And it's okay not to be okay. And I think that's really important. And the sharing of stories and the sharing of conversations, and again, you know, from our First Nations people, we know the sharing of stories, the handing down of stories that they've done from generation to generation, how important that storytelling is. And I think it's important that we all continue to do that in ways by having honest, open, vulnerable conversations with each other so that we can understand that we're not alone, number one. Because that's a horrible feeling when we think I'm the only one feeling this way. But that's what the sharing of stories will do. So all the conversations that I know you have with people on this podcast, Carolyn, allows us all as listeners to understand there are great people in this world. We are surrounded by beautiful humans. Let's make sure that we're surrounded by them in our own circles, because we are energized by each other's passion, you're energized by each other's vision, and we're energized by each other's resilience to keep going. And I think that's what we all need to do right now, by galvanizing those connections so we continue to be resilient enough to show up in this world and give the world the best of us. That's what I'm hoping for.
Thank you so much, Heidi.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?